Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
And I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
You're the best! We're the beautiful! We're the only!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
All right, welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I am your host, Kyle Autry, joined by my co-host, JD. JD, how are you, man?
Dude, I just stubbed my toe.
Well, did it hurt?
Yes. When's the last time you stubbed your toe?
I actually do it a lot because I've got pretty big feet, so I'll stub it on a corner, and I'm always like, God bless it.
What size shoe do you wear?
15.
Shit, that is a big foot. What size does Shaq wear?
Like 22.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
I wear a size 13 and it's hard to find shoes.
Yeah, you can still shop in the store though, so I don't feel bad for you. Once you get past 13, then it goes to like black Nikes, white New Balance, nothing in sandals.
Well, that's why Jesus walked around barefoot.
Well, maybe he had big feet.
Hey-o.
Yeah, so I'm excited. We've got a fun one this week. I think it's going to be a good one to kind of go back and forth with. So you guys are hitting that download button on today's podcast, and we're discussing the 1991 action sci-fi, I think it was meant to be a comedy, Suburban Commando. Before we jump into Suburban Commando, though, let's fire up the DeLorean and jump back to last week. JD, we reviewed The Lost World Jurassic Park. I thought it was a fun episode. We've gotten a lot of downloads. What was your feedback on the episode? Do you think shared your opinion?
You think they shared my opinion? I got a little bit of hate from people that responded, and they were like, I love this movie. You're crazy for hating on it.
Okay. I think you are, too. I think it's better than what you give it credit for, but to me, it's my third favorite Jurassic Park film. I go Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, the remake, and then The Lost World. So,
that's not a fair assessment because we haven't reviewed the third Jurassic Park movie. William H. Macy's mustache is just a winner through and through.
And we have the return of Alan Grant. So yeah, definitely a future episode. If you guys want to hear that third episode, make sure you tweet that to us. Shoot us a message. Let us know you love the Jurassic Park franchise. And we'll bring you one more episode of them. So if you're listening to this episode, make sure that you interact with us after every show. Give us your feedback. Make sure you're subscribing to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, YouTube, Podtrack. I mean, any of the places that you listen to your favorite podcast will be on there. Except for Stitcher. I've been a little too cheap to pay for the old Stitcher membership. But everything else, we're on there, we're live streaming. But let's get into our first segment here, JD, of what's coming down the pipeline.
Hey, I'm freezing my butt off here. There's cool guy coming for any event.
Yeah, we froze the pipes. We're going for a little ride.
So every week we preview what's coming down the pipeline for the show, what's coming in the theaters. So next week on the podcast, it's time to kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy, because we're going back to Independence Day. The week before, we had the great Jeff Goldblum. The week before that, we had Will Smith. And now here they are together in this episode of Independence Day. JD, let's tease it a little bit. What do we look forward to most when we get into Independence Day?
Independence Day is a landmark movie. Like, it's an applause to American cinema. It's sad what happened with the sequel.
Very
I have
sad.
No idea where the third installation of that franchise is in terms of production, but the first movie is a standalone gem. And I saw this when it came out in a drive-in theater. It was partnered with The Nutty Professor. This is just a fantastic movie. Like, I mean, I personally reread the president's speech on Independence Day on every Independence Day.
I know. You usually message that on Facebook, don't you?
I do. And text it to everybody. Like, it's kind of my thing. It's like, I hate the 4th of July, but I love Independence Day.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk a lot more about our 4th of July traditions and what we do on those weekends. We'll talk about that on the Independence Day episode. But let's preview what's coming out in to cinema here the week of June 29th. I'll start by saying it's probably going to be a good day to go back and watch some of the movies that are already in theater, like Jurassic Park, Deadpool, movies that maybe you haven't been out to see yet. Incredibles 2, saw that with my son. I really liked it. Good movie. Doing very well, too. I think it's the highest grossing animated movie of all time now, opening weekend. Like 180 million or something like that. Or I'd also recommend going to see Tag. I saw that the other day. Very funny. Yeah, I don't think you have to be a male to understand like the bond between these guys. I think it's a very cool movie, especially if you grew up with like a group of friends and you guys were kind of goofballs. I think that's a movie that you'll love. But let's talk about what's in the theater this weekend. So we've got Sicario, Day of the Soldado with Josh Brolin, Benicio del Toro. And then we've got Uncle Drew, which is starring Kyrie Irving, Shaquille O'Neal, and Chris Webber. Uncle Drew looks funny to me. I think that's worth a watch if you're a big basketball fan. But other than that, I mean, we don't have much to get too excited about here. JD, any interest in these two films?
I gotta say, it's a very easy and big pass to Sicario. I didn't see the first one. I have no interest in the second one. The trailer just looks like shit. I mean, it's just, okay, fantastic. You've got big name actors. You have somebody protecting somebody. You have gunfights. You know, I'm watching my way through Breaking Bad right now. Why do I need to go see Sicario?
Mr. White? That's a great show.
I will give you props to Uncle Drew. Little known fact about me, I am actually a massive fan of street basketball. Harlem Globetrotters, there was the street NBA game, everything that people do like outside of the NBA for just street balling, like I find so fascinating. I love the culture behind it. I love the idea. And I think Uncle Drew kind of looks like it might encapsulate a lot of that, which we have not yet seen in the cinema.
Okay.
So I have not followed the NBA since Alonzo Mourning left the Charlotte Hornets.
So 1995?
There you go.
They still had Muggsy Bogues. Hey, you'll be happy to know that your boy took home some hardware in a street ball tournament back in the day. It was called Gus Smacker. Do you remember those tournaments?
I most certainly do.
Yeah. So, yeah, I had a team one year, and we took home some hardware. So it was fun. That was a tough tournament, though. Man, those street ball, like, even the three-on-threes were rough. Like, I remember I had a fractured bone in my foot. And I also had a black eye after the tournament.
I was going to say, probably one out of three Gus Macker games ended in fights.
Yeah, we didn't get into any fights, but yeah, they were going on, especially on like the adult courts. Ooh, not so much on like the 13-year-old courts. We played it pretty cool, but...
I popped a Polish guy in the jaw one time. He had it coming.
So that's it for the what's coming down the pipeline segment. Let's jump into our next one. Oh, wow.
Wow, flippers and all, wow.
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 This is a nice boat.
Wow, I sort of got screwed on the old bedroom selection. Every room's like four times as big as mine.
So every week we share our oh wow moment of the week. JD, would you like to start off or do you want me to take the honors?
You know, I'll take it. I'll take it, run with it. I know you've got a good one, you know, sitting under your wing right now. My oh wow is not super exciting. I'm going to name drop to scriptshadow.net. They put out an article this week, or I guess it was last week, about The Truman Show.
Oh,
and nice. It was a review of the original screenplay in comparison to the movie. And, you know, I never realized that The Truman Show was a spec screenplay. Spec screenplay, meaning some schlub sitting in his mom's basement, just writing it on his own for passion. and broke it into Hollywood, got Jim Carrey attached and Ed Harris, and in my opinion, won a future episode, and two, probably one of the greatest movies out of the 90s. So I was just like, oh, wow. It's like, I didn't realize that movie didn't come out of the studio system.
Wow. That's great. That's a good story. I like that. My oh wow moment of the week isn't as uplifting as that, but it was my birthday last week, so I went into FYE, thought I would look around, see if I could find something I wanted to buy myself, because nobody gives me gifts anymore. Thanks, JD. Well, with that being said, I didn't buy you anything for yours either. Fair play. I went into FYE. I did buy a DVD. Honey, I Blew Up the Kids. Future episode, hoping we ever get to a Rick Moranis movie. Upon signing up, normally, I'm the type of guy where they're like, hey, would you like to sign up? And before they can even finish, I'm like, not interested. I'm just swipe my card, let me go about my day. But he's like, yeah, you know, it's a rewards card. You'll save 10% on every purchase. I'm like, oh, like one of those things you just put on your keychain? He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, yeah, sign me up. So I do it. I get done. Before I leave the store, he's like, okay, here's what you're going to have access to. He pulls out this whole booklet. And then he circles on the back, if you want to cancel, here's the number. I'm like, cancel? He's like, yeah, it's $11.99 after the first month. And I was like, you son of a bitch. So, oh, wow, FYE, you pulled a quick one on me. I thought I was getting a free card to save some money and earn some points, but now I got to call and cancel. I tried to do it right away. They said it hasn't been put in the system. You got to wait 3 days before you can cancel. Hoping I'll forget about it and they'll get their $11.99. Not happening. That's my oh wow, JD.
I guess my oh wow is in response is FYE is still a thing.
Yeah, they're back. Yeah, they closed up in our mall and then they returned like 3 years later. Basically the same exact store. Doesn't look any different, but they've got a lot more toys, a lot more t-shirts, got a lot more like Funko Pops all over the place. And their DVD section and CD section is relatively pretty small, so I think they're just hoping to like get a new market. I don't know.
What was FYE before? Didn't it used to be called something different?
I don't know. I'd have to like Wikipedia that and see. I don't know.
Was it like Suncoast or something?
Oh, Suncoast Video.
Maybe
they might have bought out Suncoast. I don't know.
We used to go to one in high school. There was an FYE and it had a video arcade attached to it.
Now that's cool.
It was badass and nobody would ever go to it. So we would go to this video arcade and had a game called Simple Simon. Okay. And it was essentially like a Bozo Bucket kind of a game, but designed for kids. But the ticket capacity was set at the maximum. So if you were to get like 1,000 points, you would get like 1,000 tickets. Being that we were grown teenagers, we were able to easily like lean over the line and drop the ball in the maximum bucket and get 1,000 tickets for a quarter. And we used to just get all sorts of candy, get all hyped up on Starburst and cause havoc.
I'm all hyped up on Mountain Dew. Yeah, I love arcades. We still have a couple really fun ones around here. You got to come visit so we can hang out, number one, and two, do some like arcading because there's like three or four different places in Fort Wayne.
Done.
They're legit too. So $20 usually will last me like 3-4 hours. So let's get into some intro to Suburban Commando. Suburban Commando is a 1991 American science fiction comedy film starring Hulk Hogan, Christopher Lloyd, and Shelley Duvall. The film is directed and based on a screenplay by Frank Capello, and it was the veteran director's final film. I found it funny. He didn't die after this, by the way. I think that was just it for him. The film was originally titled Urban Commando and was intended for Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger, but those two opted to pass. And they went with Twins from 1988. And the script was later bought by New Line Cinema as the follow-up to another Hulk Hogan film that lost on the poll topic, No Holds Barred. JD, I know we talked about this in the teaser trailer episode, which is in the archives now. It came out on Monday. I believe you had saw this first in VHS. As a rental, but what did you go back to watch Suburban Commando? What did you think of the movie?
okay, officially I'm torn because I have to watch it as an adult, but I'm trying to watch it as somebody that would have seen it for the first time when it came out. And I think that there was a lot of missed opportunities to make the story a more global story. But at the same time, it is just the epitome of the 90s. And I love that. I so love that.
This is a pretty far cry from Christopher Lloyd's films that had come just about a year or two prior, when he did the third sequel for Back to the Future. The quality of this movie, the budget. I mean, if you're his agent, why do you let him sign up for something like this? This feels like a bad career move for him.
Well, what else has he done in this time frame?
Well, that's a good question. I can pull up his IMDb. We'll take a quick peek at it. So I know Adam's family is right around the corner from this movie. So yeah, Back to the Future 3, 1990. He was Murlock, the voice of one of the DuckTales characters in that movie. Then he did Adam's Family in 1991 along with Suburban Commando. And then he goes on to do Dennis the Menace, Adam's Family Values, Camp Nowhere, Angels in the Outfield. Got to be a future episode, The Pagemaster.
I forgot he was in Dennis the Menace. He plays such a great villain in Dennis the Menace.
No.
He is so good. When the cop is like, what are you doing here, homeless guy? And he's like, just passing through. Just
passing through. It's got a very gargly, raspy voice. I love it. So that's pretty much it. I don't have a lot about the filming. There's not a lot of info on Suburban Commando. I'm hoping by the time we get into the full review, I get a response, because I did reach out to one of the stars of the film and hoping to hear something back. So no spoilers. If I don't hear anything back, I'll spill the beans at the end and let you know who I tried to reach out to. Hint, it's not The Undertaker. Now, let's jump into some interesting facts here. I've got only a couple of them this week. There's a prop from this movie that was basically reused from another film that is a absolute cult favorite, one of the best films of all time, and it's the PKE meter from Ghostbusters. It was reused in this film as a homing device. What do you think about that, JD?
Dude, that's really effing cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat scene, too. They're looking for Hulk, which is Shep in this movie. They're looking for one of his guns from the Galactic Universe, and they're using it to track it down. It's a pretty neat scene.
Do you remember the Ghostbusters toys from when we were kids? Did you have the plastic PKE meter?
100%, yes.
I want that again. I can't, like, if I had a time machine, I would go back in time and be like, listen, you little asshole, do not throw that away.
Yep.
When you are 33. Don't break the Nerf part.
Don't throw it away. Don't ruin your toys. I threw away so much valuable toys from my childhood that are worth like a small fortune. Now it's almost depressing to even think about it.
And I've rebought so many.
I know. It's ridiculous. All right. WWE, soon-to-be Hall of Famer, all-time great wrestler, Mark William Calloway, the Undertaker, appears in the film as one of the two bounty hunters sent by General Souter to go after Ramsey. And he shares the scene with Hulk Hogan, who's also a WWE wrestler at that time, was the Hulkster, the red and yellow brother. This, of course, was suggested by Vince McMahon. So Undertaker had not yet debuted in the WWF. And during that time between his start, they were making the movie and Vince had high hopes for him. Vince planned to do with Hogan and Undertaker what he did for Hogan and Zeus, by bringing into the WWF the villain of the film, The No Holds Barred, which starred Hogan alongside Tommy Tiny Lister. Zeus was also trained to become a wrestler, but after that angle quickly died away, Vince had hoped that this movie would be a hit and that he could bring Undertaker in to being this known villain that would attract audiences, but it was not to be, because this movie bombed pretty hard at the box office. And you can get all that info on the teaser trailer episode. JD, what do you think about The Undertaker here and seeing him in Suburban Commando?
I loved it when I saw it when I was a kid, and I loved it watching it as an adult. It's such a cool little throwback to think of The Undertaker as a young up-and-coming star that needs a non-speaking role in a movie. The legacy that he built through the WWF/E, you know, from the upcoming two decades. I don't know. It's just, it's cool to me. It's like,
yeah,
much love.
Okay. I think you're going to like this next quote here. It's my last interesting fact. Hulk Hogan was asked if he would ever do a sequel. And he said he would gladly make a sequel because he's been asked, quote, a million times by little Hulkamaniacs all over the world to make a sequel. And then he added he would not invest his own money into it. What do you think about that?
I'm torn from two angles on that. One, a sequel would be so badass to have Shep Ramsey as sort of the leader, possibly sending, I don't know, I haven't watched wrestling in a while, so I'm just going to say John Cena.
Okay.
Back to Earth to accomplish a mission. And, you know, like it would be a blockbuster hit, hands down, finger snap, done deal. But the fact that he wouldn't invest his own money suggests that he doesn't believe in the product or the prop.
I think it also suggests that he probably lost his ass on Suburban Commando because he's an executive producer on the film. But I think why he's like, there, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice. Yeah.
There needs to be pops. Like, you know, Funko vinyl pops are for everything, but not Suburban Commando for some reason.
Oh my gosh. Could you imagine, like, the first off, just having the Shep Ramsey one where he's in his get up, and then the frozen Christopher Lloyd one?
Antifreeze.
I was frozen today. So that's it for interesting facts. We're going to take a quick bathroom break, and then we will be back on the other side with the full review of Suburban Commando, brother.
Wait a minute, what are you doing, Don?
I need fuel.
Back in Time pod listeners, I want to tell you about a new partnership that we have. We've recently just partnered up with Bunny 17 Media, an independent publisher that is home to a variety of books, comic books, graphic novels, and more for children, teens, and adults. JD, tell our fans a little bit about what they have to offer.
Comic fans will love titles such as Scorn, the story of a teenage vigilante seeking revenge for his best friend's murder. Ouch. Blasto the Clown, an unlikely superhero whose powers come from a cursed enchilada. That one actually sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Twisted Magic, about a woman trapped between an unclear past and an uncontrollable future.
What about our fans that like don't read comic books, though?
Oh, dude. Comedy fans will enjoy Kevin Hates Everything, Brain Farts, Secondhand Boogers,
like Person that.
Fade, yeah. And How to Quit Being an Asshole in 5 Easy Steps.
Hold on. You're telling me there's a way for us to quit having you be an asshole all the time, and it's 5 easy steps?
Apparently.
And our listeners get like some type of discount with this too?
Yes, but I'm staunch that you guys can't stop me from being an asshole in 5 steps. Bring it.
Awesome. So our listeners, go over to bunny17media.com. Use the promo code BACKINTIMEPOD. You get 15% off your entire order, only for our listeners. That's bunny17media.com, promo code BACKINTIME, and you get 15% off and support our podcast. All right, welcome back from the bathroom break. We're ready to dive into the full review here of Suburban Commando. So the movie begins, and we've got just an amazingly horrible shot of a wannabe Death Star with some, like, Nintendo graphics. JD, how great are these graphics here?
Yeah, I definitely kind of remember a lot of these special effects being very differently. I remember them being a lot more exciting when I was a child.
So General Suter, who's dressed in all black, when they get a message that they have an intruder, and we've got Shep Ramsey. And he comes in, of course, played by Hulk Hogan. Let's take a quick pause and talk about Hulk Hogan. JD, was this the first movie that you can remember seeing Hulk Hogan in?
It really has to be the first movie that I saw with him, and I don't necessarily know that I understood his star power or just how influential he was in the wrestling world and would be for future generations, but he's kind of he's an impressive man.
Let me ask you this. Had he stuck to the acting and pushed through a lot of his early projects, could he have the type of career that The Rock now has, who also started very slow?
That's a good question. I don't know, because The Rock did a lot when he was younger in his career and has sort of like reemerged. But I really think, like, pound for pound, Rock is a better actor, though.
So. Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, 100%. Okay, so we see Shep. He's beating up some guys left and right. Must have gotten some bad sound here when they were recording all these scenes, because we've got a very dubbed over Shep voice that was so obvious that it's been dubbed over. Did that annoy you at all like it did me? I was just like, oh, geez.
It didn't really annoy me, but it definitely stands out. And I think that it goes, like you're saying, for some, just some production foibles. It's just not very good for a final product of a Hollywood.
Okay. I've been waiting to ask you this question here. So he gets captured by a couple guys working for Suter next. Are these the Nasty Boys?
I hope so.
It looked like the Nasty Boys, but they're not credited. And I didn't do a Google search to figure it out. But, man, that really looked like Brian Knobs.
No, it really does.
Okay. Well,
it has to be. Well, we'll say yes. We'll say yes. We'll start the internet rumor now that it's a yes.
So Shep escapes by turning on some boosters on the bottom of his shoes. The ship is about to blow up when he gets away in his own little tiny ship. It kind of looks like, so you know in Jurassic World where the kids get into that little thing that, like, it's just like a big, like, circle, like clear crystal ball almost.
Yeah.
It looks just like that. I don't know. Maybe this movie's ahead of its time.
It definitely, it could be.
It's like a, I don't even know how to describe it. But anyway, he gets away. He's kind of like spinning out of control. And he's like, stabilize, stabilize. And finally it does. And then he gets a call from his boss who informs him that he just needs to relax, lay low. He's got to recharge his transformer. So it's to 0.01. And Shep's like, that's going to take like 6 weeks. What am I going to do for 6 weeks? And his commander says, consider it in order. Well, that's going to bring us to our title screen. What'd you think of the first scene here, though, with the ship blowing up and Shep making it away safely?
It's I like it. You know, it's a cool way to set up this movie. It does a great job of establishing just how powerful Shep Ramsey is. We get all the intergalactic battles and, you know, we get to see just how grand of a scale that the story exists on. It's just a shame that what happens next never meets what this first scene is.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. We've got the theme song playing in the background. I'll insert it here. It's very cheesy, but you can hear some Hulk Hogan singing, so it's worth listening to. And then we also have our first shot of Christopher Lloyd. So, JD, what's your favorite Christopher Lloyd film, and why is it when he's the villain from Dennis the Menace?
It definitely is. It 100% is him as the villain in Dennis the Menace. He is so terrifying in that role.
It's an underrated Christopher Lloyd film, for sure. So Christopher Lloyd is playing Charlie Wilcox. He's basically kind of like a typical suburban dad working the 9-to-5. He's kind of underappreciated at his job, but he doesn't have the backbone to stand up to his boss. So he comes into the house and his wife is asking him if he's asked for his raise yet and that they need the extra money. And then I would assume he's some type of architect because he's carrying like those like rolled up, whatever you call those things, like architecture diagrams
that they used to use. Blueprints.
Blueprints, okay. Before we had iPads where that was much simpler. and his wife puts him in a headlock here and then forces him to say that he will ask for a raise before she like kisses him on the cheek and she's like, have a good day. This is so weird. Like, could you imagine your wife putting you in a headlock?
I can't imagine like anybody putting you in a headlock like that. She's madness.
Yeah, very intense. So he enters his boss's room next, and his boss is played by Adrian Belts. His boss is Adrian Belts, played by Larry Miller. Man, this guy is always in this type of role. He's always in a suit. He's like the unlikable character, but he does a good job. Like, do you recognize him? Do you have any favorite Larry Miller movies?
He was the dad in 10 Things I Hate About You, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he's good in that. No, he's such a cool actor. He just comes off with such, like, you just hate him so much. He's so punchable.
Yeah, and I really hope we do at some point 10 Things I Hate About You. I like that movie.
I do too. We should. I mean, we haven't even really broke into so much about that genre of 90s teen romantic comedies or whatever the hell you'd call them.
Yeah. Well, did American Pie. We touched on a little bit. Archives. Charlie gets booted out of the office without getting to ask for his raise, and he leaves, and the secretary says, "How'd it go?" He's like, she's like, "You strike out?" And he's like, "I didn't even get up the bat." So he kind of leaves. He's upset. Shep arrives in some club next. He turns on the power and music starts playing. I shouldn't say arrives. He crashes into this building. And he kind of looks disgusted with the music and all the lights and stuff. So he pulls like the power cord in half. And then we see him outside and he's just like, "Earthlings." Man, how great is he? In these first couple scenes before we get going, the movie falls apart.
The movie spends so much time sort of just like explaining to us just how big and powerful and gnarly he is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we only need to look at him to see that. We don't need, you know, so many setup scenes for it, but it's still fun to see. And I love the idea of an alien being crash landed on Earth. Like, everything is foreign to him, it seems.
Yeah, about 6 minutes in, I was thinking, man, this thing might turn me again. It's be like Super Mario Brothers all over again. And then we get into some more scenes. So we see him walking down the sidewalk. Everyone's staring at him. They all look scared. He goes by some girls who are kind of giving him the eyes. We see an RC Cola machine. JD, when's the last time you saw an RC Cola machine?
It's been quite some time, but I had an RC Cola within the last year, so I vouch for it. Still good. Best pop to go with pizza, right there, RC.
Really? That's a bold statement. Yeah. Okay. So Shep sees a dog burning in a hot truck. He tells the owner the owner tells the dog to shut up. He's overeating lunch. So we see Shep clenching his fist next, and the next shot is the dog eating the owner's lunch. And then Shep walking away wearing the guy's outfit. It's very Terminator-esque, this scene here. And then last part of this is Shep grabbing a sign off a lamppost that says apartment for rent. What'd you think of this first scene with Shep in the real world here?
It's funny to watch him interact and see people interact with him. But just so much of it just is so baffling. Like, what is that guy doing sitting there eating? Like, what is he eating, like rice and beans with his dog locked in the car? Like,
right.
It's just so like implausible the way that a lot of this is set up. And like, even there's repeated jokes that go on throughout the movie that is just like, why is this happening? Like, with the mime, like.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a street mime? I know we'll get to it. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get there. Charlie arrives back home from work. We've got some guys across, like his next door neighbors, who are blocking his driveway with a race car of some type that they're working on. Charlie doesn't even really put up much of a fight. And then his next door neighbor kind of calls him out on that. And he's like, should have left the door open, let that guy hit you. The car is zoomed by at about 100 miles an hour. Charlie ignores him, just goes inside. His wife, Jenny, is dressed up kind of provocatively here. I think she's trying to get a little piece. Maybe look in the beak, but Charlie's in no mood for it. He wants to go work in his shed. And when he opens up the door, he yells for Jenny. He's like, what have you done? And she explains that she converted the entire shed into a rentable apartment. So now he doesn't have to ask for the raise at work. But Charlie's pissed. He storms back inside the house. The doorbell rings and he's about to meet. He's about to meet Shep, who's here to rent the apartment. What'd you think of this scene, JD?
It definitely sucks that, well, one, I didn't know that Shelley Duvall could pull off anything and make it look good, so props to her. But, I mean, that's kind of a bold asshole move by her to, like, convert his workspace into an apartment. why doesn't she just get a job or something if they need money?
It's the 1990s, man. The wife was supposed to stay at home. Now, in the next scene, Charlie says, I can't believe you rented to him. The guy's enormous. Shep enters. He's got both kids in one hand, holding them up by their pants. He says, are these yours? And Jenny yells not to put her hands on the kids. Jenny yells not to put his hands on her kids, and he just drops them. And they're like, no, that was cool, and they want to go again. The kids are Mark and Teresa. You may recognize Mark here. He's played by Michael Faustino, who's the younger brother of David Faustino, Bud Bundy. He was also in episode 3 of Back in the Time podcast. We covered Monster Squad up in our archives. I did reach out to him trying to get some feedback. I never got a response back, but I was hoping to hear about his experience on set. Nothing happened.
That would have been fun.
Yeah, it would have been nice. Shep tells them after they sit down to eat that he's from France, and he's putting down some serious food here, too. So what do you think of the first scene here with Shep kind of meeting the family for the first time?
Finally, it's great to like let the story have its legs a little bit, and it's a big part of what drives the story is Shep's interaction with the family, specifically Christopher Lloyd. So why he picked to be from France, I have no idea. I never understood. Like, nobody really seems to care or question it. Like, he's clearly not from France.
No. Charlie is spying on Shep from the house. He sneaks through the yard, kind of crawls, army crawls, looks through the window. And Shep is going through all his weapons and gadgets here. He leaves the made-up apartment, and Charlie goes inside, pulls out one of the weapons, he clicks it on, and it fires a laser beam that goes through the wall and then blows up a car across the street. Up in space, they're able to track the blast from the gun, and we have our first shot of the Undertaker here, Mark Calloway in real life, and he's very fresh-faced, very young at this point. His character's name is Hutch, and his sidekick here is Knuckles. Knuckles is played by Tony Longo, who you may recognize from a future episode I know we're going to cover at some point, as he is Mesmer, the catcher in Angels in the Outfield. JD, what were your first thoughts on Hutch and Knuckles?
I didn't realize that was their names.
Yeah, they have characters' names, but they don't talk.
They don't. Well, there's one line.
Yeah, there is one. We'll get to that.
No, I know we've talked about the Undertaker's role in this movie pretty extensively, both at the intro and then in the teaser episode. But I like what they did. I like including these two characters, these kind of interesting space bounty hunters. They play like a good contrast to Hulk Hogan's character. So I enjoy every scene that they are in.
Yeah, and they have to get some big boys too. The guy that plays Knuckles is about 6'6" and a half. Taker is about 6'8". So they couldn't go out and get like a 5'11" guy to be the adversary for Hulk Hogan. Now, Charlie is talking to himself in the mirror next, and he's going to go outside and tell Shep that he has to leave. He's got to pack his bags. When he goes outside, he sees Shep bench pressing some stuff over his head, and he just can't bring himself to say anything to him. Shep's a little high strung here. He hears Jenny scream. He goes in and kind of pulls her off the couch, and she was just yelling about a TV show. And then the mailman drops off some letters through the door, and he attacks that guy with a knife. And then the paperboy hits him with a newspaper, and he flips out over that as well. But she kind of has to like pull him back a little bit. I did love that when Jenny went inside after she stops him initially from hurting the paperboy, he does throw the paper back and knocks him off his bike. And then he goes, bullseye, smartass. And then they pan to the kid, and he's like, face first, ass up in a bush. It's a funny scene. I actually like this. What do you think?
Yeah, it is cool. You know, like he is high strung, and he really does need a vacation. Boss was right to send him to Earth, I guess, for a vacation. But we get to see these hijinks, Hulk Hogan showing off his strength in random weird ways, and that just pretty much comprises most of the movie.
Yeah. Mark arrives home from school with his buddies riding a skateboard. They ask him to give it a try, so Shep gets on the skateboard but flips about 10 feet in the sky. One of the kids laughs and says, even my mom could stay on longer than that. Shep grabs the skateboard and throws it literally to the moon, and the kids all scatter and just run away from him. And then let's hear our first clip here with Shep talking with the neighbor guy here.
Great strength, piss ass balance.
And who are you?
Commander of the 94th Fighting Beagles, Colonel Dustin, Dusty McGowell, United States Army. You can call me Colonel.
Who are you?
Ramsey, Shep Ramsey, Nepon First Class, Commander of the Secret Strike Force 119, under the guidance of Zanuck Vivian, Supreme Doctorate of Rule through Vita 9.
Vita 9. Things certainly have changed since 44.
All right. JD, what'd you think about Shep's decorated background here?
he definitely has a decorated background, and I love that he's able to just share it with this old timer. Obviously, doing the math, this guy served in 44. He's probably dead by now.
Right.
Right? But it's cool. I mean, like, it's a scenes like this that like make me want to love this movie more than I did as an adult, to see the way that they put him with his alien space army background against this crazy old kook of an old man just drinking on his front lawn.
So for the second time during the film, and this will be kind of a reoccurring theme, Charlie has to try and gun it to get through a stoplight. And again, he doesn't make it. He's got to kind of slam on his brakes, and then everybody else goes through the light. What are they trying to accomplish here with this writing? Because they do it like I think three times.
You know, I don't know. I don't know if maybe they just needed to pad the story with some more scenes to fill it in there, to show, give some humility to Charlie, to know, to paint a picture of just how frustrated and downtrodden his life is. But I mean, dude gets beat up by his wife. I think that's a pretty clear enough picture. We don't need to see his crappy commute to work.
So again, he's going to have to deal with the neighbors. He pulls up to the house. They're again blocking his driveway. But this time, Shep sees what's going on. He goes over and literally picks up the car from the front end and walks it backwards so Charlie can drive in. The neighbor guy, who I recognize definitely from a lot of movies and TV shows, comes over and says, "Do you have any idea what we're going to do to you if you make even one scratch on these?" And Shep says, "Let me guess. You're going to pound my face, break every bone in my body. Then you're going to drag me across the gravel road, feed my remains to a warthog. Is that about right?" The guy says, "No, this is the 90s. We'll sue you." Moments later, Shep saves Mark from getting hit by a hot rod flying down the road. And then Shep takes off chasing after it. He eventually catches up, flips the car over, pulls off the door, throws the kid in the passenger seat about 5 feet. And then Shep pulls out the driver. He's about to land a huge right hand when Charlie stops him. JD, he almost hulked up for us here. What'd you think of this scene?
Yeah, you definitely do want to watch him fully hulk up here and just rip this guy's face off. Because, I mean, this is such a stereotypical thing from 90s movies and TV shows, to have the speeding car in the neighborhood is like that, you know, ongoing pest. But man, I love the reaction from the scenes of the neighbors when they're just going to threaten to sue him. And I feel like there's a sequel to Suburban Commando where he's just stuck in litigation from all these lawsuits filed against him for destruction of property.
But just don't ask Hulk Hogan to put his money into it. He's not interested, brother. Later that night, Charlie and the family have made Shep a chocolate cake to thank him for all he's done. Hasn't been much because you just met them. It's kind of weird. They take a family photo. Later that night, Shep is out for like a midnight jog. Charlie's following him around with a camera. Shep sees a lady getting mugged, so he grabs the mugger, throws him into a trash can, returns the purse to the lady. Next shot, we have a mime. Shep thinks he's stuck in some K7 force field. He's like, "I'll break you out." And he punches him right in the face. And the mime says, "Maybe I should just stick to juggling." Charlie follows Shep into the building where his aircraft is. and he powers it on. It says he still has 27 days and he's still stuck here. Shep leaves. Charlie goes into the aircraft, and I get the feeling a guy like Charlie, who's very smart and likes to fix things, he's going to really like this aircraft. JD, what do you think of this scene?
Yeah, you know, Charlie's got curiosity to him. What either of them are doing out and about like this in the middle of the night so casually, like gallivanting down dark alleys and in weird warehouses and finding creepy mimes. Like, seriously, what is this mime doing?
Just trying to make a living, dude. I don't know.
Mimes, how do you pay a mime? I mean, do they have a little hat, drop a dollar in it?
Yeah, they'll have a little bucket you can throw some change into if you like what they're doing.
Yeah, but it's a mime. It's not doing anything.
I know. Trapped inside the K7 force field. Anyway, Shep leaves, and then he kind of comes up to this arcade. And I'm actually going to play a clip here because this is the first time where we hear that classic Hulk Hogan voice come out a little bit here. Let's take a listen. This is right before he gets into the arcade room.
No way or way, the galaxy this time, Dragons! Oh no, we got deflectors!
Use your phasers!
I can't, I'm in hyperspace!
Then launch photon torpedoes!
You're crazy, Dragons and Zords! Photons will get more power!
Impossible! I thought only Zenites could do that!
My shields are failing!
Try boosting your injectors!
They're out! I'm doomed, it's over!
It's never over!
You don't get to feed Dragus!
That's what they said about General Suter. Give it up, Dragos! Give it up! Give it up! Give it up, Dragos! Give it up! Give it up, Dragos!
Wow! You did it! You just saved the galaxy! Yeah! Play this game a lot.
Game? What game?
Oh, dear God. JD, what do you think of the arcade scene?
I'm confused to how he thinks it's real.
And use your photons! Come on!
That was a good one. I mean, how does he think it's real? How does he know all the lingo for the game? Was it are we to believe that it's modeled after his life and his space exploits?
I can't explain it, man. I don't know what they were thinking in the writing room.
And then the kids applaud him after beating a video game. Huh? Like, you stole, like Hulk Hogan, you stole that kid's turn.
You stole his quarter. Yeah. Shep leaves the arcade game. And he runs into the mime again. This time, the mime's acting like he's climbing a ladder. So Shep goes over there and says, "Let me give you a hand." And he throws him like the proverbial ladder, just throws him up in the air. And then you hear the mime say, "That's it, I'm done." Back at the ship, Charlie's going through all the gadget. He sees a X-ray goggle, he puts it on. And he can actually see a lady getting attacked in this alleyway. So Charlie walks out, and he's got all the gear on. And he says, "Let the woman go." Charlie tells him that he's got the strength of 10 men. And the mugger just shoots him and he falls over and he can't get up. Ah, the old 1990s gag of he's fallen and he can't get up. It never fails. JD, what'd you think?
Yeah, it's a classic. You've fallen and you can't get up. It's kind of a metaphor for Charlie's life. He's just fallen. He's a lost man. Curiosity's got the best of him. I hope somebody can save him.
So he clicks something on the armor here and is able to help him get back to his feet. And he eventually takes down the muggers here. The lady thanks him for his help. And then we go back up in the outer space and Hutch and Knuckles, who at this point have not spoken a word yet, they see the skateboard that Shep has thrown into space. Next, Shep wakes up in the morning. He's got a bunch of loud noises that he's hearing. He hears a girl crying that she's lost her cat. So he goes over, pulls the tree branch all the way down to the ground, and then she's like, "That's not my cat." So he just lets the branch go, and the cat goes airborne, and he says, "I hate suburbia." JD, what'd you think of the cat scene?
They're getting worse. It's just the same gag over and over and over. It's taking a stereotypical scene from the 90s and applying Hulk Hogan's strength to it. Like, up to this point, we've had very little in terms of developing him as a character or Christopher Lloyd's character or much of a story. We got a little breadcrumb that the aliens are coming.
Right.
But outside of that, we could have accomplished that after the first scene. The aliens would have just followed it.
Shep goes back to his ship. In the next scene, he spots the bounty hunters. He's looking at his equipment. And then moments later, he's storming into Charlie's work. The secretary says he's in a meeting and cannot be disturbed. She yells to take a seat, which prompts Shep to go and literally pull the whole bench off the ground and put it on his shoulder. Charlie's boss comes out, and without missing a beat, he's got these Chinese people with him. He goes, oh, look, the chair's here. I thought that was actually funny. Back inside the office, Charlie and his boss are talking. His boss is telling him he needs him to get a new blueprint done, and that will help seal the deal. He still won't let Charlie speak, and he kind of pushes him out of the office again. When the door shuts and he turns around, Shep is in his face waiting for him, and he wants his N2 tantalizer. Charlie admits he was in the ship and touched his stuff, so they go outside per the secretary's orders, who has now pulled a gun on Shep. And outside, Charlie's trying to get his car open and fidgeting with his keys. So Shep just goes over, pulls the door off, and says, let's go. Let's listen to a clip here of Shep explaining what Charlie did when he sent off a flare.
Killers with the deadliest high-tech weaponry in existence may be on their way here right now because of you.
Me? What did I do?
The weapons, the suit, their power sources can be traced. When you turn them on, it was like sending up a flare.
Shep, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
You didn't ask.
You said maybe, that they may find their way here.
They may not get an exact fix. They could pass us right by if no more flares are sent up.
That's why you gotta get that N22 thingy back, right?
Right.
JD, what'd you think of the scene?
You know, it's... I'm crapping on this movie a lot, but at least this makes some sort of logical sense, I think. The fact that they can trace the energy signature back to them, so it makes you kind of feel some stakes and some weight to the story here for kind of the first time. You're like, okay, we have something now, something that we can work with, and we have something to move towards.
Do you feel bad for Christopher Lloyd at this point at all?
A little bit, yeah, I definitely do. And I thought that he's had a couple of stinkers throughout his career where I'm sort of like, how did he get in here?
Yeah. He's been married like 5 times. That might be our answer. I don't know, a lot of alimony. So Shep has a homing device next, and that's going to help find the gun. You'll notice here that this homing device looks very familiar. That's because it is the PKE meter from Ghostbusters, a borrowed prop from the department. Come up on a police officer who's been frozen by the gun. Charlie says, wow, a freeze gun. They go inside the bank. Everyone's frozen. Christmas music begins to play. We see the muggers inside. They're stuffing a bag full of money. Shep attacks them. Charlie goes to grab the N2 tantalizer. The mugger gets the gun from Shep and he shoots him, but he happened to have like a 5-hour energy drink of antifreeze in his pocket, and he's like, antifreeze. And then we hear a big explosion, and Knuckles and Hutch enter. Shep has to grab the frozen Charlie and throw him over the shoulder, and he's just like stiff as a board. It's hilarious watching him bounce as they're running. And then the next shot is them going down the road, and Charlie's entire body is standing up through the sunroof of the car. JD, what'd you think of this scene here in the bank?
This, to me, is, like, one of the most memorable scenes of this movie, the antifreeze. Like,
yeah.
I always think about that scene anytime somebody says antifreeze, or if you need to get some for your car, I'm always like, yeah, I'm just going to drink some and then get shot with a freeze gun, but it'll be okay. But in reality, you're not supposed to drink.
Yeah, don't drink it like it's a 5-hour energy drink. That would be bad for you. Shep explains that the bounty hunters are here. Shep explains how dangerous these guys are and says they go through the town, they're going to start murdering people. Charlie says, you're like some sort of space warrior. Next shot, we're at a Surfin' Burger. The drive-thru guy sounds like Ed from Good Burger. I don't know if you picked up on that or not. He's like, welcome to Surfing Burger, home of the Surfing Burger. Can I take your order? He tells Hutch and Knuckles that they're a cute couple. So they just both turn their head at the same time and just blow the sign up. Back at the ship, something overloads in the circuit board and that blows up. Shep says, that's it. Now we have to fight. So he tells Charlie that the suit that he's giving him can take 2 direct hits. Charlie says, look, I'm just your landlord. I bring you soap when you need it. Stop the occasional bank robbery, but being the target for intergalactic bounty hunters is a little out of my line. Shep says, listen, little man, it's your fault that they're here. Charlie says, my fault? You came to my house trying to pass yourself off as an earthling. How the hell was I supposed to know you were some sort of alien Rambo with psycho enemies? Shep says, what kind of man are you anyway? Your planet, your family. Charlie says, exactly my point. My family, my planet. We were fine before you brought intergalactic grudge match here. You're the one that put them in danger. All these guys want is you. Christ, I was frozen today! Shep agrees, you win. It's not your fault. It was a million to one shot anyway. If I lose, they'll leave the planet with my body. Unless you can show me where I can find about 40 pounds of simian crystal. Charlie says, crystal? Belts. And that's the end of the scene. What do you think of this interaction? This might be the best acting that Christopher Lloyd was able to pull out of Hulk Hogan here.
It is a fun scene. You know, like, we're getting shreds of character development coming out between the two of them, and it's worth it to see them interact and get some comedy out of them. They got some chops here. It makes you feel bad a little bit. You start to feel bad for Charlie, then you start to feel bad for Hulk Hogan. At the end, I don't necessarily know who I'm supposed to be rooting for or feeling bad for because the tone changes, but yeah. Who cares?
This might be the first movie out of 45 that we've ever gone, who cares? They arrive in tuxedos at Belts' party. The secretary continues to hit on Shep, but Charlie breaks it up and says he promised to show him his office. So they get into the office, but the crystal's gone. They go in back to Charlie's car and they get some of Shep's gadgets and they find the crystals upstairs in the new wing. The signal sets off the bounty hunters, though, who now arrive at the building. Upstairs, Belts is showing the Chinese buyers the crystals. Shep tells Charlie to get them out of here. Charlie tells him that he has the drawings in his car and he'll bring them over to Belts' office. So they leave to go to the office and then Shep and Charlie get to the crystals. And then the secretary says, you can't take those. But the bounty hunters enter. Shep tries to hit them with a metal rod, but Knuckles catches it with his hand and bends it. Hands it to Hutch, who bends it back straight. And then tosses it to Shep, who then bends it into a bunny rabbit. JD, who wrote this shit?
See, the part that just gets me is like, yeah, it's visually funny, you know?
Right.
Sure, it's funny. It's worth a laugh, but at any given time, these space aliens seem to know a lot about Earth, and that at other times they don't know the first thing about Earth. So how does he make it into a bunny rabbit? Does he know what a bunny rabbit is? Like, I don't get it.
It's a good point. Shep double hammers the tops of Knuckles' shoulders here, which sends him through the floor. Hutch turns on his jet boots and flies toward Shep, and he's about to kill him, I think, when Shep turns on his jet boots and sends Hutch flying through different floors of the building. And you have some just horrible reaction shots here from Undertaker as he's flying through the different floors. Shep says, see you later, camel breath. Knuckles grabs Shep's foot, and before he can pull him down through the floor, Shep says, talk about cheap construction. Hutch comes out of the bathroom with a toilet on his head. This is real stuff, people. Knuckles and Shep continue the fight. Knuckles gets crushed to death by an elevator, and Shep just barely gets out of the way before it crashes on top of him. The elevator door opens, and it's Hutch. Shep says, ah, what is this, a tag team? Hutch says, and then Hutch replies in a child voice, you're dead, Ramsey! JD, what in the holy butthole is going on with this? And why does Undertaker, this big, giant, 6'8" man, have a baby voice?
Yeah, I've never understood why he has a baby voice. Like, why, you know, if he they don't talk, and then all of a sudden now he does talk, and he has a child voice. I know I laughed at this when I was little, but I don't know. It's just sort of weird.
I wrote that I did not laugh at this, and it was just plain stupid. That was my note.
Man, we're being brutal to this movie.
I think it's warranted, though. Anyway, Shep says, no wonder they never let you guys talk. Again, Hutch's jet boots start up, and they are on some type of cart flying down the hallway. Eventually, Hutch gets thrown through the wall, and Shep says, game over, you lose. We're in Belts' office. The Chinese translator says, Mr. Zukaki would like you to tell him the plans. Of course, Belts has no idea what the plans are, because Charlie's the brains behind it. And he starts telling him, yes, well, you know, every floor will just have one floor. And we'll separate them. And that's why we're recommending walls. We smash back to Shep telling Charlie he's leaving the planet. He doesn't want to risk anyone else getting hurt. He tells Charlie thanks before getting back to his ship. So Charlie pulls up to his house. He notices the front door is open. He goes inside. His wife and kids come running. And they're like, oh, thank God you're here. And then following behind them is General Suter. Charlie says, you're supposed to be dead. Suter says, you must be the partner. Charlie explains that Shep is an intergalactic warrior. Shep is an intergalactic warrior and that he foiled this man's plans. Charlie arrives at the ship with the family and General Suter. And as he walks in, he apologizes to Shep, who doesn't understand why he's apologizing. Shep gets inside the ship and tries to target Suter with a weapon on top of the ship. He fires a couple shots. Suter tells him he has 10 seconds to come out before you see the insides of this beautiful child's head. He's taken the girl hostage. Shep says to himself, sometimes you have to lose the win. And he presses a keyboard and it says, warning, self-destruct mechanism has been activated and they have 4 minutes. Shep comes out with a gun to Suter. He says, let them go, and I will not even put up a fight. Suter lets them go. Charlie and Shep talk, and he tells them to get the family out of here. Shep drops the weapon as planned, and we hear the tires burn out on Charlie's car. Let's take a quick break. What do you think about the... We're kind of at the climax here. What do you think of this scene so far?
It's totally worth it to finally get some action and get some sort of, you know, to bring Suter back. Make him a big bad villain capable of killing people, but it's just so, like, I don't know, like we've sat through so much of this movie where nothing's happened, and now it's like all of this could have happened in the first act and we still could have had just as good or better, it would have to be a better movie.
Charlie pulls up to a shopping center. He lets the family out and he tells them he's got to go back to help. We're down to 2 minutes and 35 seconds left on the clock. Suter is shooting towards Shep, but he's not hitting him. He's kind of, just like shooting around him on purpose for some reason. Charlie comes driving through the doors. It sends Suter flying, but Shep was hit in the process and he lays motionless on the ground. Charlie puts on Shep's mechanic glove and nutshots General Suter, which causes him to turn into Gilman from Creatures of the Black Lagoon. Great episode. It's up on the Terrible Terror podcast right now. Check it out. Shep tells Charlie to look out, and he tries to fight Gilman, but he's getting overpowered. Only about 30 seconds left now. Shep snaps apart an electric cable and jams each side into the Gilman and electrocutes him. The disco music starts playing. The lights turn on. Shep puts Charlie over his shoulders, runs out of the buildings with only seconds to go. The entire building blows sky high. JD, what'd you think of the scene?
It happens. That's the scene that happens. We got Gilman.
Why is Gilman in this?
I don't know. I have a feeling that the majority of their budget probably went to bringing out those prosthetics.
Yikes. The family arrives with police officers and they spot their father and Shep. They run over to see if Charlie's okay. Shep says he took on General Suter by himself with his own two hands. He's some kind of guy. Jenny says, oh, Charlie, you're the finest man I've ever known. I can't even say this stuff with a straight face. Let's listen to a clip of Charlie entering the meeting with Zukaki.
It was Raymond Burr in Godzilla. Nick Adams was in Rodan. Now, Mothra, it's another classic, by the way. Wilcox! All right, this better be good, make it fast. We've been up all night, so Kaki's about to take his business elsewhere, and I'm running out of Japanese movies, so just explain your incompetence.
My incompetence?
Yes?
Is that what you've been telling them?
I've been telling them what's good for the company. Just be a man and accept the responsibility.
I'm the one who's been saving your butt for the last 3 years. You want somebody to talk to Mr. Tsukaki about incompetence? Do it yourself. You're the expert. I quit. Wilcox! Charlie! Chuck?
All right. JD, what do you think about Charlie quitting his job?
Yeah, it's a good little cap off to his emotional journey of hating his job and hating his boss and then going through hell and almost getting killed by an alien overlord. So, I mean, when you have big fish to fry, you smack your boss with some blueprints.
Shep is walking down the street next. He says he's leaving the galaxy now that it's saved, and he says he has no loose ends. He gets over to the skateboard guys and... I guess he does have one more thing left that is a loose end. So he gets on the skateboard and he starts doing all these tricks. And he ends up, oh my gosh, doing a handstand, backflips. He, in the process, breaks the wheel on the little kid's skateboard. So Shep says, here, take mine. And he gives him this one that's like jet powered. And the kids run off with their new board. He sees the little girl crying again about her cat. And he says, again, are you positive it's your cat? She says, yes. He pulls down the branch again. And she says, bad kitty. And then she pulls on the branch and he lets go. And she gets shot up in the air. But he catches her and then tells her to get a goldfish. They're on top of the building next. Shep is dressed in his gear. He's about to board his ship. He's asking Charlie, what are you going to do next? Charlie says he'll land on his feet. The secretary, Margie, is on the ship. She comes out and tells Charlie, this is just purely educational. Charlie laughs, and Shep tells him he better get going. Charlie tells him to have a nice flight. Shep gives in and shakes Charlie's hand and says goodbye, even though he says he doesn't do goodbyes earlier in the film. The family wave goodbye. The ship takes off in the sky. In the last shot of the film, we're back to the stoplights again. This time he takes off and he doesn't stop. Even when he gets his red light, he zooms through it, waves goodbye to everybody who stopped at the light, and then stops his car, gets out, shoots the stoplight, and then just pulls away in the credits roll. And that's it. JD, what'd you think of the ending of the film here? Let's put a bow on it.
Where is Charlie going?
I don't know. He has no job.
He's got nowhere to go. Like, what is he doing, Charlie? Just running around with an unlicensed alien firearm in your broken car?
He's like, you know, I don't have to be at work today, so I'm going to go join the morning traffic. I'm going to beat them this time. I'm going to shoot out the stoplight and then wave goodbye to them as I don't head to my job.
Yeah, not well thought out by Charlie, I guess. I don't know. I mean,
we can't put that on Christopher Lloyd. We just can't. It's all writing.
It's not his fault, and it's not like he can work on his workshop at home anymore because his wife destroyed that. Now all they have is this little bedroom apartment in their garage. Like, his life kind of sucks.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. You said earlier it was not what you remembered it. I guess, how would you compare this to your viewing when you were 6 or 7 years old?
Man, I remember being so pumped up after watching this movie when I was a kid, and then going outside and playing Suburban Commando and shooting stoplights. And yeah, now I was just, it was kind of a pain to watch. It was very difficult. It was just gag after gag after gag. I mean, if this movie was not made, I think that humanity might be better.
I feel like this would be a really good Funny or Die 13-minute skit. We just take the first 6 minutes and the last like 7 minutes. And we'd be like, oh, this wasn't too bad. It was funny seeing Hulk Hogan in a movie.
Yeah, you know, I really wish that. And I know I voted for Suburban Commando, but I kind of wish that we would have done Mr. Nan instead.
I wish we'd have just done an episode of WCW Nitro, to be honest. That would have been more entertaining. But anyway, we'll be back next week with an all-new movie to review, and we promise this one's going to be worth watching. We're going to be dropping the teaser trailer for Independence Day on Monday, and then we'll do the full review following. You know, it'll come out on Wednesday or Thursday. Support the podcast by clicking on the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and YouTube. And make sure you like, share, and retweet our post. You can support our sponsor, Bunny 17 Media, at bunny17media.com. Just use promo code BACKINTIME at checkout. You save 15%. But that's it. It's time to get into the DeLorean, punch in today's date, and return back to present day. We'll talk to you on Monday. See ya.
And what was the deal with Punch and Knuckles being at the drive-thru to begin with? What were they doing? Were they hungry? Do they even know what's going on?